Social Contract Commander Podcast. I'm Mike Allman, and joining me is my co-host Alex Lapp. Alex, what's up? Hurry up. We got a lot to talk about. So much stuff.
Well, I thought not too much was up, Mike, and I am happy to be here, but what's all the rush here? What's going on?
So, it's weird, because, like, the Doctor Who set, pre-cons, all of it, lots of
right.
it, lots of it. Alex, there's a lot. There's a lot.
Yeah,
Alex,
holy cow, Mike. There
you sent me a lot.
There is so much. There's so much. I mean, we've talked about getting big sets, big political sets before. I think that this set was all but designed to be a political set, like New Kavanagh conspiracy, things like that. And as a result, the number of cards that we are going to talk about over the next multiple episodes of
three,
our social contract set review.
There's so many.
You know, I mean, normally it makes sense for a content creator to be like, okay, well, you know, we're talking about 400 cards, so it makes sense we have like three or four episodes.
Right,
us, we only talk about a small subset of cards, Mike. We talk about those social cards, group hug, group slug stacks, symmetric effects, all the stuff that our listeners love, we love.
Yeah.
But, Mike, there's so many of those.
Yeah. It's so we're, I just talk about it now. We're talking about like 44 cards, 40 something cards.
Mm-hmm.
And that's without us talking about any commander.
That's true.
Eligible
this,
cards.
This is only the 99, but, Mike, we have so many cards in the 99.
We do.
What are we going to do?
Well, we have that many cards. We have a lot of cards in the 99. We have a full dedicated episode just to the commander eligible cards.
Yes.
And there are weird rules and keywords that I haven't heard before and stuff like that for this set too. So, like, some of that seems like it's going to be pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that seems like it sounds straightforward, and then you're going to talk about it, and I'm going to say, hey, wait a second, and then three other things. But the thing that we normally do at the end, we're going to do at the beginning here, because these are going to go pow, 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 right.
Makes
back
sense.
To back to back. So if any of our listeners, if anybody has any questions about any kind of cool new cards, cool new effects, how they work together, ways that they can combo off, stuff like that, how would they find you, Alex?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Lappermedic, Lappermedic. And if you would like to see maybe some infinite combos that you can do with Doctor Who cards, you can head over to my other website, CommanderSpellbook.com, where we are rapidly closing in on 25,000 EDH combos.
That's a joke.
That you can search through and also put your deck list in and find what combos you might have.
That's a lot of cards. That's a
yeah,
lot of cards.
Yeah, we're doing
a
great
lot of
stuff
combos.
Over there. If you love infinite combos, you come on over.
Yeah, and if you don't love them, go on there anyway.
Yeah,
because
no, that's the great thing.
You can use
our tool to take out all your infinite combos. People like to do that too, and that's great.
Just put in a deck list and see
what
four
it's
cards
like,
you can
an
add
infinite
to get
combo.
12
I'll take that out and that out, and now my deck is weaker. Thumbs up.
There you go. And sometimes making the deck weaker is great because it makes it more fun for the entire table.
Exactly.
That's what our goal is to do. What are the cards that make things fun for the table? And let's start talking about those cards in this set. Alex, lead me off with the first card that we're going to discuss today.
Yeah, we're going to start with Mono White, Banished to Another Universe.
Okay.
Four and a white for an enchantment with affinity for historic permanence. What does that
mean? Ooh.
It means the spell costs one generic mana less to cast for each artifact, legendary, and or saga permanent you control, which is a type of enchantment. We see a lot of them in here.
Okay.
So this could cost as little as white, a single mana. When Banished to Another Universe enters the battlefield, exile target non-land permanent and opponent controls until Banished to Another Universe leaves the battlefield. Mike, this is the O-Ring, classic O-Ring effect, and this is the combined trigger, so no shenanigans, can't be doing anything where you make the creature go away forever. However, we have a little bit of upside here. If you're playing in maybe an artifact deck, or you just have a legendary deck, or maybe just incidentally you have a bunch of historic permanents, which originally from Dominaria, historic permanents, you could make this cost basically nothing, cost a single mana, and that's pretty great. Now, the downside is that if you don't have affinity for historic permanence, this costs much more than an O-Ring, which normally costs three, Mike.
Yeah, let's be completely honest about it. It's if you have two permanents out there, it's fine, right? If you have two historic
you have
permanents,
your commander and you have an artifact.
Yeah, Or yeah, I've got a Soul Ring and my commander. I'm not gonna lie. This is pretty solid as far as a built-in upside. I'm glad that they build it to where it's 5 mana at the max, so it's a feel bad card if you're not really, really utilizing that synergy. But yeah, I like it.
That's what's not funny bad. To me, Mike, is that they swore, right, up and down that Affinity for Artifacts would not be coming back. We got it during war, and we got it again here. This is actually stronger than Affinity for Artifacts because it includes artifacts, but also some other types.
Yeah.
So this, if you're playing an artifact deck, this is just gangbusters. Let's keep a good pace here, right? Because we have so much to talk about.
Absolutely. Kraken Time, 3 and a white for an enchantment with Vanishing 3. Vanishing is fun!
Vanishing comes back.
As a reminder, Vanishing. This enchantment enters the battlefield with 3 time counters on it. At the beginning of your upkeep, remove a time counter from it. When the last is removed, sacrifice it.
Yeah, very straightforward.
Yep. When Kraken Time enters the battlefield and at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, exile target creature and opponent controls until Kraken Time leaves the battlefield. Hey, good news.
Look at that.
Good news attracts a players. Would you like?
How would you like this to last indefinitely?
Oh yeah, there's a couple of cards that I've got in my weird attracts a deck, and I've seen other people that I like Vanishing as a mechanic. But I also like getting around that mechanic however possible.
Yeah, we this have both cool. Vanishing and Suspend in this set. We think of Suspend and Vanishing as kind of opposites, right? With Suspend, you're counting down until it is cast and enters. With Vanishing, you're counting down until it leaves the field.
Right.
But, you know, with Atraxa Proliferator, maybe with one of the mechanics we'll talk about later, maybe in a different episode, there is a mechanic in this set that allows you to manipulate time counters, Mike.
See, everybody, that's called foreshadowing. This is cool. I like that it happens on entering the battlefield as well as pre-combat main phase. So it is something where you're doing the ability at your next upkeep, essentially, as far as the Vanishing 3, to where you're taking a counter off of it. Mm-hmm. But it's not a feel-bad card if you play it and then nothing happens before your next turn. So I'm going to cast for 4 mana. I'm going to exile something for a while. Then on my next turn, I'm going to have a couple of turns left, but I'm going to exile something else. So
yeah,
that's pretty cool.
This is a cool variant on the O-ring effect, right? As long as you're not doing Atraxa Proliferate time travel shenanigans, this does have a built-in timer on it.
Yep.
That people like, okay, well, my thing is gone, but you know, it'll come back eventually. Although you may have won the game by that point, Mike.
Right. Or at the very least, maybe you stop somebody from winning the game.
Right.
It's enchantment, so it's not necessarily a, you know, unless you're doing other things manipulated. It's not flash speed.
You've been getting a lot of O-ring style effects lately.
Which is fine, honestly. I'd rather...
It's good removal.
Yeah, I like the removal that isn't feel bad path that thing's gone by. Mm-hmm. You know, it's...
Well, they're never doing that again.
I hope not. But they are going to get rid of stuff because board wipes are still important. And go ahead and take us to our next one because,
oh,
wow.
Boy, Mike. I think we got our very own Crux of Fate and Mono White over here. Crisis of Conscience. 4 white-white. That's 6 mana total for a sorcery. Choose one. Either destroy all tokens or destroy all non-land, non-token permanents. Mike, token decks have... you know, a small cadre of wrath effects that favor them.
Sure.
We have some that make tokens when you wipe. We have some that allow you to either kill everything above a certain power toughness or even select power toughness or just kill a high number of things, but I have so many tokens that I come out on top. But this one is Crux of Fate is in black, very similar to this, but you choose dragons or non-dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have tokens or non-tokens and non-lands. I think this slots right into a token deck, Mike.
Well,
and if you're in a token meta, maybe not a token deck yourself, you could use this to host somebody.
Oh, yeah. Here's the thing. It's a 6 mana board wipe, so it's probably not going to go into every deck by any means. If it was lower costed, you could argue that it should, even if you're not in a token deck.
But this is very fine tuning. You play this and somebody is screwed.
Yes. I'm really happy that it doesn't do the, you know, the choose one or both effect. So it's gonna be I'm glad, because that always scares me when it's that modal, and it's just, no, I want to get rid of everything that doesn't help me right now, instead of I'm gonna get rid of everything that my deck doesn't want to do. So the idea that, hey, even if you're running a token deck, you're still probably gonna hit some stuff on your own, depending on what you do. Yeah, this is a really good card.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of almost tricks you a little bit if you're not reading it carefully, right? Because you're destroying all the creature tokens, of course. You're also destroying all the treasure tokens, all the clues and copy tokens, things like that. But if you choose the other option, all non-land, non-token permanents, that's non-land permanent board wipe. So that's right. That's not overcosted at six. That's how much non-land board wipes cost.
For sure. No, it is a very powerful, very cool card. I do like that the card name is Crisis of Conscience, where it's like, yeah, I understand that there's something going on here.
It's very clear this is a choice, and the card itself is modal. And I mean, I feel like when you cast it, you know which mode there's, you want to pick.
Yeah, there's no crisis.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You're not I know exactly what I'm doing, friends.
Like, let's move on to what could be the most expensive card we talk about today. We haven't talked about the Doctor Who media or the show itself, but I've seen some of Doctor Who, and this is one of the episodes I've seen. Oh. Everybody Lives! !
Okay.
One in a white for an instant. That's two mana. All creatures gain hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. Players gain hexproof until end of turn. Players can't lose life this turn, and players can't lose the game or win the game this turn. Wow, that is a really powerful two mana card, Mike. And before we start to get into it, this is also just a great moment. This was with the Ninth Doctor, as we can see in the flavor text. And I'm not gonna like go into the episode and spoil it, but you know, this is kind of
what are you gonna spoil the fact that everybody lives? Like,
well, yeah, basically. You know, it's kind of a horrifying visage, but basically in this episode, as you can see on the card, people are how do I explain this? Some kind of nanotechnology is forcibly rearranging the atoms in their bodies to turn their face into a gas mask, so they're not like a gas mask zombie. Very spooky stuff.
Okay.
But at the end, just kind of Deus Ex Machina style, it turns out everybody's okay. And honestly, it sounds cheesy, but it works.
Listen, show's been on for, I don't know, decades.
Oh, God, decades and decades and decades.
So at this point, whatever you do that's unique, you win.
No, this is not a bad episode. But this effect, Mike, holy
This
cow.
Is Teferi's protection, kind of, for everybody.
All creatures indestructible. Players can't lose life, and they can't lose the game, and they can't win the game. This is giving me Angel's Grace combined with Heroic Intervention.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much power here, Mike. Talk to me.
It's just a very good, no, you didn't. That's awesome to me.
No, you didn't.
So, when we talk about, like, the last set, even, there was a card where it's like, it's kind of a no, you can't win the game, but it's really narrow on the ability to make it happen. And also, this is just a straight up two mana, no, you don't win.
This is just so aggressively cost. Now, I feel like the reason why it's so aggressively costed is its symmetry, right? We've talked about that kind of value, that when the designers of Wizards make a design symmetric and that it impacts everybody equally, at least in principle, mm-hmm. that they feel comfortable bringing that cost down because it's more difficult for you to break that parity and gain an advantage. However, Mike, I don't feel that this card is missing any kind of power in any way. Holy moly, this is so good.
But it's very good, and it does a very powerful effect. But it doesn't feel like, I don't know, I have no problem with a low cost, no, you don't combo out this.
Yeah, you're right. This is very Teferi's protection.
Yeah, this is not something that you do to win the game. This is something you do to prevent mm-hmm. somebody from winning the game. Or more importantly, to not lose
the game.
And like
we look at Angel's Grace, yes, it's very expensive and people play it, but it's not super popular, even though it's a one mana split second, oh no, you don't. So even though this is expensive right now, it may continue to be expensive, I don't know if I would expect this to become a staple, but I think that this could, I don't know if this would supplant Angel's Grace in my stacks deck, maybe it'll go into one of my stacks. I think this is a really nice effect, Mike.
So you say that. I have a question.
Yes.
Heroic Intervention.
Okay.
Just call it Heroic Intervention. Forget about the other effect here, okay? All creatures can gain hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. Heroic Intervention is in 28% of the decks that it's eligible to be on EDH rec. If you just consider everybody lives a heroic intervention for the table, I think this is a card that goes in a ridiculous amount of
decks.
It's
a good point, right? I was thinking about the Angel's Grace part, but the heroic intervention part is what people really like. For some reason, they don't care about Angel's Grace as much. But heroic intervention, just being able to have one spell that protects your whole board.
Everybody's. That's the everybody's coolest part to me.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody lives. No, I mean, this is one of the coolest cards in the set, and that's saying something, because there's a bunch of awesome stuff.
I'm a big fan, and I'm on the same page as you. You and I both look at the, hey, this is a cool effect if somebody's not going to be able to win or lose the game this turn. That's pretty right. Cool. Oh, yeah, by the way, it's also this other card that's really, really popular.
Well, I mean, we want to give it at least a couple of seconds of consideration here. Obviously, you can cast this to save your hide, as it were, right? You can cast this and somebody's like, well, now I'm going to win the game. You're like, well, no, you're not going to win the game, or you're not going to wipe my board, or you're not going to pop off.
Yeah.
But also, this could be used to prevent somebody else from losing the game.
Yep. Doesn't have to just be
you. That's a powerful, that's a deal maker right there, Mike.
It absolutely is. And not just that. So my favorite cards are not the ones where I play this and I win the game because I play this card, game over. My favorite cards are the ones where I'm going to play this, so on my turn, I win the game. So
this is that pillow fort before you go for the
win. Absolutely. Yeah. And I like this kind of card a lot, where somebody's going to wipe the board and everybody's excited about it and I'm the arch enemy because I'm in the lead. Hey, no, everybody keep all your stuff. It's cool. Look how nice I am. By the way, it's my turn. I swing out and I win.
That's just brutal, because even if they cast, this isn't one of those things where it's like regenerated each thing. Even if they cast another board wipe, it's still not going to do anything.
Yep. It's very cool.
We could just go on and on. This card is awesome. I might end up picking this up if it drops in price.
Everybody lives. Good job.
This is between $30 and $100.
Right. Depending on what's going on. Yay. Oh, pre-orders. Okay, let's talk about something everything different. Everything comes to dust. 7 white, kind of changing the mana scale.
A little more
here.
Expensive on this one.
Yeah, for a sorcery, but it has Convoke. So,
oh my god.
We love Convoke, being able to tap creatures to pay for the mana cost as well for the spell. But with this one, it matters, because the rest of the card reads, exile all creatures except those that share a creature type with a creature that convoked this spell, all artifacts, and all enchantments.
Holy moly, Mike. Well, real quick.
Yeah.
Before we go into it.
Yes.
This effect has appeared before, but it's very rare.
Yeah.
Convoked or convoked with. So that means exactly what it says on the tin. If a creature was tapped down to pay for the convoking effect of this cost, if you chose to do that, that creature is said to have convoked this spell. That's all.
Right.
Now let's go on.
Okay. That's a lot. So exile all creatures except those that share a creature type with a creature that convoked this spell. Okay. All artifacts and all enchantments.
I mean, this is giving me... I mean, it seems on the tin, right, that this would adhere itself to Typal. Like, oh, I have a zombie Typal deck or whatever.
Right.
And so that'll protect. But not really, right? Because, first of all, the first thing you need to know, right, is that you can overpay for Convoke.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? You can just keep tapping things down if you want to. And it doesn't really matter that, you know, let's say you tap 7 down.
Yeah.
But you have more than 7 things you want to save. You can just keep going.
Keep going. Well, because you can tap things for the colored mana, too.
You can. You can cast this for 0 if you have white creatures, Mike.
Yeah, this... So...
Ooh.
Okay.
Spicy.
So, getting rid of... So, this is a get rid of all artifacts,
this is
all
exile,
enchantments...
not destroy.
Oh, sorry. Exile. Exile.
Ooh.
All artifacts, all enchantments, and every creature that didn't share a creature type with the things that you tapped.
Ooh.
Right?
Well, sometimes somebody will incidentally have one or more creatures that are caught by you saving your own creatures. And that can be a decision you make. Like, are you willing to destroy your own thing so theirs is also exiled? Or do you want to save both? But we've talked about a lot of great board wipes recently, Mike, that allow you to sort of fine-tune that dial and choose, like, what do I want to save and what do I not want to save? And, Mike, you really get to choose what you want to save here.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're destroying all artifacts and enchantments. And
you are.
Specifically
the artifacts and enchantments are exiled. They're gone.
Sorry, exiled.
It's more powerful than destroy.
See, now I'm trying to do the, like, okay, what if I turn all of my enchantments into creatures? and that, ooh. Well, I'm playing games with it in my head now.
If they're still enchantments, which yes. most of those effects are, they're in both enchantments and creatures, it's still going to hit them. Because okay. it's saying exile all enchantments.
Right. Okay. That's
so
fair.
They would have to like turn into creatures only and no longer be enchantments, which not too many effects to do that.
Well, that, dang it, you're right. That makes sense. Okay, well, fair enough.
Now, I love Convoke, right? Convoke is awesome, Convoke's great. Especially for go-wide decks, for token decks, especially for white right here. You could, as we said, potentially cast this. It says 10. Mm-hmm. You could cast it for less than that. You could cast it for zero mana if you have 10 creatures, three of which are white. And let me tell you, casting a 10-mana spell for zero feels pretty good.
Yeah.
So you save all that stuff.
What's the most powerful thing you can do in Magic? It's play stuff for without having to pay for
it. Without its mana cost, yeah.
Right. That said, I like, this seems really powerful the way that we're describing it, but I also like the balance there to where, hey, if you've got 10 mana or 10 permanents, 10 creatures that you can tap, a lot of creatures that you can tap
right.
to save, well, there's a decent chance that you're doing pretty well as is, and you don't necessarily want to wipe the entire board anyway. So there is this kind of like nice line of you get this card in your hand and you're reading the board. And you get to make a lot of decisions with it before you cast it. And that's pretty cool.
That's usually the problem with board wipes. And I think that's why maybe some players, I'd say, erroneously shy away from them. Is because they, in their mind, envision themselves as having a board state, casting a board wipe, and then losing what advantage they had.
Right.
So they only see the negative.
Right.
However, even outside of board wipes like this, where you can basically say, well, I get to keep my stuff. It's a, you know, it's an asymmetric board wipe. We do have to consider that very common case where even if you are a deck that commits a lot to the board, like a token deck, that you could still end up behind.
Yeah.
And need to board wipe to bring yourself back to neutral ground, Mike.
For sure. I just love the idea of doing this with like changelings or shapeshifters and just
well
like,
yeah with no. changelings it'll save every
right creature. Exactly I just really wanted to destroy artifacts and enchantments.
But I mean if, I don't know if that's worth if that juice is worth the squeeze
oh
right?
no
you're
for
paying
sure
a lot for this
no
you want to exile something
it's not optimal at all it would be funny okay let's move on you mentioned
let's
earlier that we got a couple of sagas and let's start with our first one here what do you got for me.
So I got the Caves of Androzani, which is 3 and a white, 4 mana total for an enchantment saga. And we have 4 chapters here.
Okay.
First chapter, put 2 stun counters on each of up to 2 target tap creatures. And I guess this is now becoming an evergreen keyword, although I feel like I haven't seen it very often, just very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
If a creature has a stun counter on it and it would become untapped for any reason, for example, during your untap step, instead remove a stun counter. So it just doesn't get to untap, you remove a stun counter instead. Mm-hmm. Chapters 2 and 3. For each non-saga permanent, choose a counter on it. You may put an additional counter of that kind on that permanent. So a little bit of a mini proliferate going on. And you can actually protract the amount of stun that's happening if you want to.
Sure.
Or maybe -1/-1, maybe +1/+1, whatever you want. If they have counters, you can do a little mini.
You can another one of that.
Yes. Cool. And then onto chapter 4, search your library for a doctor card, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle. And of course, maybe not this episode, but maybe in an episode or two, we're going to be talking about a lot of doctors, Mike.
Yeah. It's interesting. Okay. You get to proliferate essentially twice if this thing sticks around.
Right.
But the
now, proliferate's more powerful because you can choose any number of counters on each object and, as you like, add 1 or 0 of each of those. But for this one, you'll have to choose one of those counter types.
Yes. And when you choose that counter, you're choosing it. I mean, choose is nice. But I guess for this, when you're talking about non-sagas, okay, so it's not synergizing with that. You're adding one more counter onto those permanents, which is pretty cool. I want to talk about the first thing, though. Put 2 stun counters on each of up to 2 target tap creatures. It's a pretty cool way of saying these things that are tapped, they're not going to untap for a while.
It's giving me Yosei the Morningstar.
Yeah, 2 counters.
Yeah.
So that's 2 untapped stages, but they have to already be tapped.
Right, so they're tapped, and then the next time they come to untap, you remove a stun counter. then the next time you remove a stun counter, then the next time they get to be untapped.
Right. You have to get to three untaps before you could get to be a useful
another stun counter using chapters 2 and 3.
Right, exactly. So this is a, you know, in its own way, kind of a pacifism effect. It's not exiled, but it is a, like, no, this is going to be slept for 3 turns minimum.
Right.
Maybe it's more.
Now, that applies to, you know, activating abilities with tap and the cost or attacking, but mm-hmm. it's not going to stop any of their static abilities generating continuous effects.
Sure.
Or activated abilities that don't require a tap from being activated or from occurring.
And that's why I like it, because it's based off of the fact that you have to do, for that effect to count, for it to matter, mm-hmm. you're doing it to things that are already tapped. So they're already gaining some value or gain some value by a tap effect, whether it's attacking, even in the weakest
that's
of instances.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I saw it as a downside, but now it's almost like a selection bias.
Yeah. You're going to hit things that actually wanted to tap for a reason. Good it point. Could be something lame as, well, this guy's got no blockers, so if I swing at them, at least I'm going to hit them and get some value off of it. Well, great. Now it's tapped down the entire time. It's a cool effect. I like this card. I'm not you know, writing home about it, but it is a cool card.
Right. I mean, we want to be realistic, right? When we talk mm-hmm. about sagas, we talk about planeswalkers, things that have to remain on the field for multiple turns to get most of their value.
Yeah.
Although, just mentioning planeswalkers as a bit of a sidebar here, this would allow you to add a loyalty counter on
that. That was the other thing I was excited
very
about.
Nice,
yeah.
Very nice there. You could push it into ultimate range. But we want to be looking at the earlier chapters for the most part, because right. the later chapters, it might not even get there, Mike.
Yeah, which is why, hey, the chapter 4, search your library for a specific card, reveal and put
card.
In your hand.
Card right. with the doctor type on it.
Right. So here's the thing. That could be very useful. But I don't know, and we aren't going to know until we get there later. Let's
that's
talk
4 turns after this if you're not proliferating.
Right. Let's talk. Let's move on to another saga here. And when we talk about you know, good starting effects, hey, we found it. The Knight of the Doctor, 4WW for a saga, only has 2 chapters. Chapter 1: Destroy all creatures. Well, okay, it's a pretty good
yeah,
effect.
There you go.
Right off the bat.
Yeah, as written.
And then chapter 2, and I really like this, return target legendary creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. Put your choice of first strike, vigilance, or lifelink counter on it.
This is giving me Karn's Temporal Sundering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to blow everything up.
I think
up.
This is really cool. Now, this, after chapter 1 resolves, which is immediately upon its resolution as a permanent spell, people will want to remove this, Mike, so you don't get your commander or legendary creature back.
Well, and that's what I wanted to talk about. I like this card because you think about it, it's like, oh, cool, I'll put my commander in the graveyard. Are you sure?
Yeah, are you sure you want to do that? Because
you
once
do
it's
that.
In the graveyard, now it's staying in the graveyard.
Right, so, I mean, I think this is a card. You play it, and you're hoping that you got...
Gambit.
You've got another legendary creature that you're excited to bring back, as opposed to your commander, is my hope.
Well, you can hedge your bets, right? Because if you're able to, in any way, either reanimate or even exile cards from your graveyard...
Right.
Once it moves from your graveyard to exile, now you can put it back in the command zone again.
Yeah, I like the Knight of the Doctor as... Again, it's 6 mana
it's
for a 4WW. That's a
two
lot.
2 chapters.
But yeah. 2 chapters...
You're getting 100% of that early board-wide value. You're getting the board-wide no matter what. That's happening.
Well, yeah. And then you just start hoping... If you're in a deck that's doing a lot of graveyard manipulation, maybe you have ways to get this saga
ooh,
back.
Yeah.
And then, okay, great. Blow
maybe
it up.
Maybe you have
cool.
Now I'm manipulation bring... and you are re-triggering a board-wide multiple times.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like this effect. We've got our first legendary artifact.
Pandorica, 2 and a white, 3 mana total.
Yeah.
You may choose not to untap the Pandorica during your untap step. Mike, we've seen that clause on a few cards, and I think we know exactly what that means.
Every time it's sad.
Every time
it
means
doing it too.
I'm keeping you locked in my lockbox. 1 and a white and tap an activated ability, untap another target non-land permanent, then it phases out. It can't phase in for as long as the Pandorica remains tapped. When the Pandorica becomes untapped or leaves the battlefield, that permanent phases in, activate only as a sorcery. Another O-ring style effect, Mike, but this one phases out. So you don't get ETBs, you don't get ETBs, and you don't get your commander being allowed to send to the command zone.
No, because it just not it just doesn't exist for as long as this is there and tapped. I like this a lot.
This is as aggressively costed.
Well, it's aggressively costed, but the effect is still five mana.
For the first one. But as you do more, it becomes overall a better value, right? Because it's only two mana to...
Right, but if you untap it, whatever you had phase out phases back in. So it's a five mana to play it and use it. And then it's two mana to choose what is the most deadly thing or what is the most dangerous thing to you and make it go away. And you can only do it on your turn.
Okay, so it's giving me like the inverse of Fairy Artisans, right? You're locking down one thing. Now, if you were to have something that could copy an activated ability, then you could get multiple things with this.
True. And that's also why I like the fact that this is a legendary artifact. So unless I'm going through a bunch of hoops, I'm not making a whole lot of this.
Right.
I have to copy the triggering effect, right? This is cool. I like this as a... I don't love stacks as a playstyle for me. I don't like telling people no that much. But what I do like is, that's going to make the game bad. I need it specifically to
I'm imagining this, first of all, this I'm being reminded of Oubliette, which is a great black spell that does almost very much this, but it can't repeat.
Right.
But I'm thinking of this interaction, just envision this, right? What if you have something locked down, you have something phased out using the Pandorica, and then you allow it to become untapped and it phases back in? What is going through everyone else's head? They're like, ooh. He let that come back. What's he going for next? Like, I think that's a really cool dynamic.
And here's the thing. The fact that you can only activate this at sorcery speed, that's a downside. Don't get me wrong. But what it does allow for is on everybody else's turn, they're going to do the thing where they say, okay, Alex, I'm going to play something, and I know what you're going to say. Oh, that has to go into the bad box.
That has to go into the Pandora.
But here's what, and then there, it's kind of a reverse rattlesnake, where they have a turn to deal with it, but,
it creates an interesting play
so
dynamic.
Cool.
I would love to see it be played so I could better understand the dynamics that happen as a result of it.
So same imagination land that we were in before. If I play this card, and I get rid of something really, really terrifying, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the entire table is happy except for the one person who lost their terrifying thing.
Oh, come on, dude.
Now you get to think about it this way. It's your turn. You can play something that's terrifying, but are you sure you want to play something that's more terrifying than the thing that I just
removed? Yeah, we
talked
about the dynamic of baiting the rattlesnake.
Yeah.
Like, that's a really... And this, you know, this is a snake that can strike again and again, although albeit slowly.
It's slowly, but it's bringing back whatever it got rid of the first time.
Yes, it has to let loose the thing it's caught in its jaws before it can bite a new thing.
So I think this is an excellent make a deal card. Where
this is so cool.
Yeah. Hey, here's what you got. Here's what I'm gonna throw. Hey, thanks for getting rid of that Ulamog. You know what I mean? Like you got rid of something crazy. Okay, cool.
That's the other things that normally either would be indestructible or when they go to the graveyard, like Ulamog, they just go back to the library.
Right.
You don't want that to happen. Phased out is a very much a holding zone. And Mike, looking at the cost, at least on Card Kingdom, it's 99 cents.
Yeah.
Why is nobody hyped about this?
Because again, it is a single target removal card, and it is a something that only gets rid of one thing at a time, and people don't like that. When they don't look at it the same way that I think that you and I do, where it's like,
this is
a political effect. It doesn't say political effect. It doesn't say group. It doesn't say
each
player.
You got to read between the lines.
It says, what's the most powerful thing at the table? Cool. I'm going to keep that away. Now, if you're going to play anything that's more powerful than that, you better have a conversation with me, or you're going to remove this, which means you're going to bring back the thing that was in the box in the first place.
Yeah.
I like this card because it very much makes you in a position as an opponent where the only person who's really wanting to get rid of this card is the person who's currently affected by it. And that's great.
And I haven't seen the episode containing the Pandorica, but of course this is in reference to the ancient legend of Pandora's Box, which was said to be a box in which all the evils of the world were contained, but also hope. And so when you let loose the box, it can never, the cat's out of the bag. You can never close it again. Mm-hmm. And that lets all the evil out. But also, it lets a little bit of hope out. And I think that plays well for this mic.
It does, but I'm not going to put hope in this box. I'm going to put something terrible
let's,
in it.
Let's move on to another saga, the War Games. Two white, white. That's four mana for an enchantment saga. And chapter one. We got four chapters again. Each player creates three tapped 1/1 white warrior creature tokens. These tokens are goated for as long as the War Games remains on the battlefield. Let's go.
This is the best saga that's ever been made.
Holy cow. Mike, you know how much I love seeing create three 1/1s. Elspeth does that. Now, granted, these are tapped, but I don't even care.
You're burying the lead, though.
Yeah, let's keep going. Let's keep going.
Oh, no. I was talking about the fact that the 1/1s are goated. That's awesome.
Yeah,
they're goated
indefinitely. Yeah, until this leaves the battlefield, they're goated, which is great.
Yep.
And it's everyone's going to swing in with them. They can't attack you if they're able to. Chapters 2 and 3, same text. Put a +1/+1 counter on each warrior creature.
Goated 2/2s. Goated 3/3s.
Yeah. Which we're... The War Games is a appropriate name for this card. And chapter 4, you may exile a non-token creature you control when you do exile all warriors. This creates a little mini game within a game.
A literal war game in the game.
This is so cool.
So this is a really fun card as far as the way it is constructed. Because the first thing, okay, everybody's getting some 1/1s. Great. They're all goated, okay? And they're all tapped. Which means person one is going to attack.
Mm-hmm.
Person two is going to untap warriors and then attack. Because all these warriors, like, I love this idea. Where,
even the guy swing in is going to be tapped out.
Right. You can't, it's not something where somebody can, you know, I'm going to be real smart and, hey, my creatures are goated. Your creatures will be goated. How about I attack my 1/1s into you? You block with your 1/1s. We're cool.
Yeah, we're not doing Goblin Spy Master Commander face down shenanigans.
We fight.
We're scrapping.
There's going to be a scrap. And then, by the way, those things are going to get bigger.
And bigger and bigger.
I love the idea that the last chapter on
game
this saga
over.
Is that you can say, I don't want to do this anymore.
I mean, we've talked about games within games and decisions within games. This literally creates a micro game within the game, and it only lasts as long as it's on the battlefield. But if it gets to its conclusion, it definitively ends the mini game, which is just so cool. This is awesome.
Even if this is just a 4-mana, make a bunch of tokens, and those tokens do 3 damage to each of your opponents. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad. That's not bad by itself. But the extra, the other stuff that happens, even if you just say, hey, it's 4 mana and I've got 1/1s that I can do whatever I want with. Everybody else have fun. You know, this is a cool card. I really like this card.
Yeah, this card is just super cool. Goodness.
Yeah. I like War Games. We're gonna go into our next card here, and you're gonna have a lot of talking to do after we talk about this card and what it does. Because hey, first new keywords.
Yes,
the Wedding of River Song, 2 and a white for a sorcery. Draw 2 cards, and then you may exile a non-land card from your hand with a number of time counters on it equal to its mana value. Then target opponent does the same. Cards exiled this way that don't have suspend gain suspend. And then it has the words time travel. So, Alex, before we talk about this card itself, what is time travel in this set?
Right. Time travel sounds complex. In this case, it's really not that bad.
Cool.
Basically, what time travel says, if you've ever, you know, watched the show, you know that the Doctor is a Time Lord, a time traveler who has his TARDIS time machine that he's able to time travel in. So this is very apropos. And the set does deal with both suspend and vanishing, as we talked about. So in the case of time travel, we say to time travel, look at each permanent you control with a time counter on it, as well as each card you own in exile with a time counter on it. So we're talking about both suspend and vanishing, and anything else that's just incidentally a card that happens to have a time counter on it, whether you control it or have it in exile. And for each of those cards, you're going to choose... You can put a time counter on, or you can remove a time counter from it.
Okay.
Or do neither one. If you don't want to do either, you don't have to do either one. And then that'll all happen at the same time. they did want to say, I'm reading from the release notes, they want to say that sagas don't use time counters. They use lore counters. So even though sagas are very prominent in this set, they aren't affected by time travel, Mike.
Okay. All right. So again, as simple as possible.
Yes.
When you have time travel, when you are playing something that has time travel as part of it, any card that you have with suspend, you get to add or remove a time counter.
Right. If you want the suspended card to come out faster, you remove a time counter. If you don't want it to come out yet, you add a time counter.
So,
and the same with vanishing.
So what I'm hearing is that Joyra is going to get a lot of extra play now, or at least for a little bit.
Yeah, there's... Right. Now, Joyra is not in these colors, but there definitely are time travel effects in blue and red.
Gotcha.
Lots of that in this set. So, yes, time counter manipulation, you're going to see a lot of it. Let's talk about what's actually going
on. Now the card, yes.
In this card, because I've actually fielded a question already.
Nice.
As to the specific nature of this card.
Hey, where'd you feel that question, Alex?
Well, you know, you want me to say it was in our Discord.
That's okay.
And it could have just as easily been, because you know, if somebody asks a judge question in our Discord, and if I'm available, I will answer it as soon as I can. I know there exists a judge dead already, but we want to be there for our listeners, yeah. And we love answering their questions. I actually answered this question in the EDH Rec Discord.
I was just trying to give you a plug.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about our Discord.
No. That's later.
So the question was, and this is a great question because it's quite ambiguous.
Okay.
If you read the rules text, it says draw two cards and you may exile a non-land card from your hand with the number of time counters on it equal to its mana value. And then target opponent does the same. Target opponent does the same what?
Okay.
And
do they get to draw two cards?
Target
then?
Opponent draws two cards, exiles a non-land card.
So we love this card a lot.
Yes, we love this card a lot. Right. And we've seen Wedding Ring, right? Which is one of my favorite white cards that I don't even think I have because it's still above $20.
Yeah.
Where you're having multiple players draw cards, which happens in white. Mm-hmm. So target opponent and you each draw two cards, and then each of you may exile a non-land card from your hand, each of your hands, mm-hmm. with a number of time counters on it equal to its mana value, which is Joyra, right? You're going to suspend it based on its mana value. So if you have something that, you know, is quite powerful, but at a low mana value, then it's going to come out fast. But if it's a very high mana value, it might not even come out before the game ends.
Right.
It just depends. And then you're going to time travel, right? So depending on what you chose, you want it to come out faster. Basically treat it as though it had one fewer time counter on it. You're going to pull one off.
Yeah.
But if you're in a suspend deck already, or you have suspended or vanishing cards, now you're able to sort of reshape and resculpt that area. Not very much, but a little bit. Mike, this allows you to cast very powerful effects for free and also lets your opponent do the same.
Yeah. No, it does, but it's also kind of a trap at the same time because you sit there as the opponent and say, cool, I'm going to get to cast something for free. Well, yes.
I'm going to cast my 8-mana card.
But...
And it is currently turn 5,
and
so
that's
I'll
the
never
point.
Cast it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I kind of dig that as a whole. It's the cards where you're going to give somebody a benefit, but you get to take a better advantage of that benefit. Hey,
yeah, we love that.
That's kind of our thing. That's our shtick.
That's our stamp.
That's how Group Hug works as far as being good.
break our parody, baby.
But yeah, no, this is a good, I like, it's a 3-mana draw to get something for free, hopefully,
right.
In the future.
I like this better than Secret Rendezvous. I like most things better than that, but I think that this has that kind of... Because, right, you're only netting one card, right? So I don't consider this a card draw spell. Not really. Because you're only going up one. But you are giving your opponent two.
Sure.
And you are allowing yourself and your opponent to get that free thing. But also, you do some...
Potentially,
you do some counter manipulation. And only for three. I think this has a lot of value on here. Although... Probably you want to make sure that your deck can support suspending, whether that means that you have mostly a lower mana value or maybe some other counter manipulation. I don't think this goes in everywhere, Mike.
I've got one addition
okay.
to that, though. What if you're playing a deck that is extremely low?
This gets stuff out fast, although it's
right.
not benefiting you as much, is it?
So the way that I look at it, at worst case scenario, if it's a card that just cares, if you're a deck that just, hey, I just want to get a lot of stuff out. Well then, okay, here's a 3-mana sorcery. You're going to draw two cards. You're going to put something down and suspend. Then you're going to time travel, remove one of those suspend counters from it. If it's a 1, 2, or 3 mana spell that you're getting a time counter off of, great. This is a, hey, I'm going to draw two, play this thing for free next turn, or even this
if it's a one mana spell,
and I'm going to make a friend. You're
going to exile it and suspend, and then remove a time counter from it and cast it for free instantly, almost like an expertise.
Yeah. It's that powerful nothing. Powerful nothing. I'm going to do this really cool synergy, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to pay this, and I'm going to draw these two cards, and I'm going to cast this for free. Cool. And it's like, well, yeah, I guess I could have just played my Soul Ring, but this is a cooler way to do it.
Mike, what if when you're having your Wedding to River song, you have to have a wedding ring, and then each of you draws four cards?
Well, that would... we're going to just try and figure out if we can do, like, a wedding deck, which...
Ooh,
I think
that'd be fun.
I think so.
It's just that'd be so fun. Listeners, if you want us to try to make a wedding deck, do enough cards even exist? I don't know.
I think, okay, well, here's the thing. Okay, you have Wedding Ring. You have the Wedding of River Song.
Yes.
There's that one vampire wedding that happened
in
not
Crimson
too long
Vow,
ago.
Yeah, although there weren't a ton of political effects, as I recall, in Crimson
there
Vow.
There weren't. But I think the other thing you do is you play a lot of cards that have Soul Bond on it, because that counts. Mm-hmm. And then I think of other things. In fact, if there is just choose target opponent, most of those cards, I think
you
just...
you could do some melding.
Yeah, there you go. See, there are options.
Okay, listeners, if that sounds great to you, you just let us know on our Discord or Twitter.
And if it doesn't, that's okay, because it sounds like a lot of work. Yeah. Either way.
Let's keep moving.
Last card in white, Trial of a Time Lord. Yep. One white for a four chapter saga. Chapter 1, 2, and 3. Exile target non-token creature an opponent controls until Trial of a Time Lord leaves the battlefield. So O-ring
another
specifically.
O-ring
specifically for creatures.
And it's happening over and over.
Over and over and over. But then we get into something fun. And I know we shouldn't be excited about reaching the ult for a planeswalker, reaching the last chapter of a saga. But starting with you, each player votes for innocent or guilty. If guilty gets more votes, the owner of each card exiled with Trial of a Time Lord puts that card on the bottom of their library.
And it's not written, but effectively, if they're not voting guilty and they're voting innocent, then after chapter 4 resolves, the saga will be sacrificed and go to the graveyard.
Yep.
And then all of those non-token exile creatures will re-enter the battlefield.
Yep.
So it doesn't say that, but that's just what happens.
So here's my problem.
Yes.
It says if guilty gets more votes. Doesn't say anything about a tie. So that means that guilty has to win.
That's true. Guilty has to win by a majority.
Which means you have to pick on one player, probably, for this card.
Yeah, because if you're in a pot of four, that means 3 out of 4 have to vote.
Yep. Like, and I know what I'm going to vote. And if I pick on... But
guilty,
If I pick on two people and it's a four-person pod...
Yeah, you're not...
It's very unlikely that I'm going to convince one of the people who lost something.
That's a good point, Mike. You're gonna need to really bully somebody with this because, well, not just bully, but it has to be somebody who deserves
right.
it. Because if there's somebody else who's like, I don't know if you should be doing that to them, well, you know, they're just gonna get all their stuff back. Although that could be okay.
It
right?
could be.
They've now been out of play for 3+ turns.
Yep. And well, here's the other factor of it. The other thing that you have is you get to put somebody in a position where are they going to make the noble sacrifice and vote against their interests? Because, yes, I'm sad, but man, I really, really, really don't want that to come back. You know what I mean? Like,
that's true. Like, what if you hit something that's not that bad from somebody and something that's very bad from somebody else, and now they have to decide?
Here's my other question. It says exile. Yes. It doesn't say up to. It says do the thing. Exile target non-token creature an opponent controls.
Yes.
If you don't have other targets, you're going to hit something. So if there's a board wipe after this or something along those lines, and then somebody's like, all right, great, well, I'll play this creature. Well, okay, it's my turn. I have to exile that thing now, correct?
Yes, as long as there is a valid target, as long as there is any non-token creature an opponent controls that is a legal target for chapters 1 through 3, mm-hmm. you must target that.
Okay.
Now, if there's nothing to target, like right after a board wipe, then that ability will fail to resolve. You'll still keep the saga, and you'll still go on the following turn, But that turn, if there's nothing legal at all, the ability just fails to resolve.
Got it. Okay. It's a neat card. Three mana O-ring. Great. Three mana O-ring a couple of times. O-ring. Cool.
With player choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got a lot of great stuff in here, Mike.
Yeah. You know,
and that's white.
You know what? The last thing I didn't think about is, hey, this kind of makes it to where you have to pick on one player. But that means that one player really wants to get rid of this Trial of a Time Lord thing either way.
Mm-hmm. I know, it's your draw removal.
There you go. Yep. Cool. All right. Yeah, you're right. That's white.
That's white.
Pretty cool stuff. Lots of O-rings.
A lot of great stuff.
Lots of O-rings.
Yeah, lots of O-rings. Board wipes. Sagas.
You know what? White did white.
It did. Nobody can look at that and say, that's not what white does. Oh, that's what white does.
It did it real good. Moving on to blue, we're going to talk about our next new creature type. Cyber Conversion. Blue for an instant. Turn target creature face down. It is a 2/2 Cyberman artifact creature. Alex, Cyberman!
Yeah, Cyberman. They're a regular presence on the show. Uh-huh. They can look anywhere from goofy to very goofy. And yeah, let's briefly talk about what being face down means. Usually pretty simple. If a permanent is face down, it's treated as though it has no characteristics.
Right.
It's going to be a 2/2 creature, normally with no types. In this case, it'll be a Cyberman artifact creature, but it's not going to have a name. It's not going to have a color.
Right.
And it's not going to have any of its abilities that it had before.
Right.
Now, the only wrinkle other than that is that, you know, it's a Cyberman artifact creature. No name, no color. The only other wrinkle is that if any effect for any reason turns it face up. Now, normally you can't just choose to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There has to be a way that you can do that. For example, if it's a morph card,
right,
you could pay its morph cost to bring it face up. Although, you know, very few of those. Or if there's another effect that allows you to turn things face up. If that happens, it also stops being a Cyberman artifact creature, in addition to no longer being a face down 2/2. But basically, other than that, this is just your standard Ixodron face down. You know, some people might get a little bit confused with double face cards and how that works with being face down. It's actually quite interesting. A face down double face card is on its third face, which is the face down face.
Right.
Right. You don't get to get a free transform. You don't get the other face for free. It's now a triangular card with both of the faces you care about face down, and the nothing face that you didn't even know existed is now face up.
Your card is now a pyramid.
It's now a three-dimensional
card. So I really like this card a lot. I like the idea of the targeted removal that is it's I don't know that it's
there's a lot of wrinkles for this.
Yeah, there's a lot of wrinkles. I would love to play this in my, like, I would build a morph deck. I would build a flip deck just to have this kind of card where it's like, oh, this is my targeted removal / I would like to morph again, please.
Let's talk about a really common use case for this and what that would entail. The commander.
Yeah.
Right? Hitting somebody's commander with Cyber Conversion, and now it's a face down Cyberman artifact creature. It's a 2/2 with no abilities. That's probably quite a bit worse than whatever their commander was, especially if you hit it with this. But as we've discussed in the past, your cards, your commander's commanderness, we'll say, is an intrinsic quality to that specific piece of cardboard. So no matter what happens to it, if somebody else steals it, it leaves and comes back, you turn it face down. It's still your commander.
Yeah.
It still deals combat commander damage. And if it dies, you can still return it to the command zone. Although, you're going to have to find a way to make it leave the field.
Sure.
For example, by swinging in at somebody blocking, maybe some kind of deal.
Because
as it stands, it's still on the field. So you can't just say, ew, my commander's face down. I want to take it to the command zone. No, you can't.
Right. So
because it hasn't changed.
Well, think about how Darksteel Mutation is such a good card.
Yeah.
Because
so brutal.
I'm going to make something useless but indestructible.
But it's indestructible.
So good luck. But at that same time, you can get rid of Darksteel Mutation. It is extremely hard to get rid of, oh, my card's flipped over, without making a deal with somebody.
Somebody has to say, I'll block for you so you can recast your commander with increased command tax.
Right.
And you have to be like, thank you so much, which that's, I mean, for two mana, you have to cut a deal like that, and now also you're paying two more mana on top of your commander's cost.
Pretty solid.
And that's just one of many different things you can do with this, Mike.
Pretty solid. I like it. Next card, Don't Blink. One and a blue for an instant. Until end of turn, if one or more creatures would enter the battlefield from exile or after being cast from exile, their owners shuffle them into their libraries instead, and it also has cycling too, so you can pay two to discard it and draw a card. That is not why you're doing this card. You're doing this for... Nope, no you didn't. Sorry.
Containment Priest. Yeah. Now, this is perhaps in reference to what you might argue is the single most famous plotline of all of Doctor Who, which is the Weeping Angels. We're not going to get into it.
Yeah, I know what those are, and I think I've watched like...
You don't even watch
the show, right? I've seen TikToks of the show, and that's my
very everything simple. Weeping Angels, they're statues... broadly, but if you blink or look away from them, then they can move freely. Earlier this summer, the game Remnant 2 was released, just a bit of a sidebar, and as kind of an Easter egg enemy, if you went down into a secret area, there was a bunch of treasure and a bunch of like cool statues, and as you're like looting all the treasure, you can hear stuff like shifting around behind you. You turn back around, nothing's moving,
right.
And of course what's happening is that there are statues moving, but you can't see them. They move because they only move when you're not looking. But very creepy stuff.
Yeah.
For the card itself, until end of turn, if one or more creatures would enter the battlefield from exile or after being cast from exile, which is not only getting your blink effects, but it's also getting the O-ring effects, and it's getting the suspend effects.
Yes.
Yeah. Right, because suspend is casting from exile. This says none of that works. Instead of entering, they're shuffling into your library. Now, Mike, this can cause people to get caught out.
Yeah.
Right? They think that they're going to flicker something and they're going to get it back. No, they don't.
Right. It's pretty cool. It's a good control piece as far as either A, things that you have been in charge of for the O-ring effects, or even if just like, hey, I'm going to do this thing and I'm going to get a whole lot of stuff back. No. I like that a lot. It's a cool...
Now, the cycling is, you know, I'm not a huge fan of cycling myself, but cycling means the spell is modal.
Well, yeah.
And part of the problem with effects like this is you have to hold up mana for it. Now, granted, this is counterspell mana, so if you have a counterspell, you're not screwed. But it's not an infrequent occurrence that you're going to be holding up mana for this, like, okay, as soon as somebody does something involving exile, I'm going to stop them. That never happens.
Right.
Let's say. You still have you have another option.
Yep, so. It's not a useless card if you're playing
right.
the wrong pod, which is nice.
Right.
Back to the angels. I still think my favorite thing that's ever happened is when people do like the screensavers on their computer, and it's the angels.
I heard about
it's the
this.
Angels. It's the angels, yeah. And then you can set it to where every once in a while it changes to a different thing when you click off of the screen and click back onto the screen, and then there's the one where the angel's right in your face, and that's hilarious.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, that's what I know about them. Why don't you talk to me?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very well known.
Yeah, they're terrifying.
Flatline.
Yeah, what you got?
Next card is Flatline for two and a blue. It's a 3 mana for an instant. Creatures your opponents control have base power and toughness 0/1. Until end of turn.
Yep.
That's sudden spoiling. Although not quite as powerful.
Yeah. I like the, hey, we're not going to change the, no, they don't have abilities. We're not going to, you know, full polymorph them or anything like that. It's just, hey, everything that you're dealing with, it's an 0/1 base power.
You can use this as a fog, but what you can also do is weaken things either before or after to a place where... you know, simple spot damage is going to take care of them. You could set up a situation where maybe you do some attacks, they do some blocks, nothing really happens. They have damage marked on some of their creatures. You've resolved this in your after combat damage is done. And now all the stuff that has enough damage marked on it such that if it had one toughness, it would die. Now those all die and they didn't see it coming.
Right. Or even just the, okay, great, you're swinging out with everything.
Do cool. this well, and now they can't do it.
I'm blocking blocks, with really, tutus and they're done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stuff like that. No, this is pretty cool. We don't have to spend a thousand minutes on it. It's a cool card. Great. Hunted by the Family. 5 blue for a sorcery. 7 mana sorcery. Okay. Choose up to 4 target creatures you don't control. For each of them, that creature's controller faces a villainous choice. new fun words. That creature becomes a 1/1 white human creature and loses all abilities, or you create a token that's a copy of it.
Wow.
Holy cow! Just
real quick, before we get into it, because this is so cool.
Yep. I'm going to mute myself while you explain this, because I'm going to yell about this.
I know, you're so excited. This is awesome. Villainous Choice is a new ability word. It doesn't necessarily have its own rules, but it does have one wrinkle that makes it different from other choices that we're used to. Because we've seen choices like this a lot. Right. Kaneo Sentiro, one of my favorite commanders, has a choice where each player will either, you know, they'll drop a land from their hand onto the field, they'll draw a card, they'll choose whichever one. The way that that usually works is that everybody will make their choice in turn order, and then that will all resolve simultaneously. Villainous Choice works slightly differently. Villainous Choice makes it so that each individual player in turn order, or each opponent, whatever the case may be, will make their decision, and then the result of that decision will resolve immediately and then move on to the second player. So slightly different. It doesn't always come into play. Just worth noting. Mike, let's talk about how this card is so cool.
It's real
this
mean!
This is so cool. Okay. So you're going to choose up to 4 target creatures you don't control. So this is a little bit of bit of spot removal threat, right? For each of them, their controller is going to have to choose. Do they want to basically humiliate it, turn it into a nothing with nothing going on.
That they cannot, but they can't fix it. Because this is not a while this stays on the battlefield or anything like that. No, this is a 1/1 human
with
has no abilities.
Yeah, so hit their commander with this and they have a big decision to make. Do I want my commander to become a nothing that doesn't do anything? Or do I want my opponent, Mike, to make a copy of my commander?
Yep.
I mean, yeah, it's this a 7 mana sorcery, but this is so impactful, Mike.
This is a very cool card.
Very powerful. Sure.
I love that it doesn't have the hex issue where you have to target 4
creatures. It's up to 4. Yeah, exactly. Nice.
So in the worst case scenario, oh no, there's only 2 things that I really want to hit. Well, what are those 2 things? How bad are
commanders.
They? Yeah, well, great. Done. Now those choice. 2 people have to basically
super,
attack
super
each
cool.
other.
And Villainous Choice appears on many cards, and we basically are going to talk about roughly 100% of them, Mike.
That's so cool. I really like this a lot.
Like, this card is $20.
Yeah, it's mean.
I love it. So cool, so cool. Okay.
Get me into our next one.
Let's talk about Nanogene Conversion, which actually is the precursor to the Everybody Lives card we were talking about earlier. Same episode.
Okay.
It's a sorcery for 3 and a blue, 4 mana total. Choose target creature you control. Each other creature becomes a copy of that creature until end of turn, except it isn't legendary.
Oh, boy.
Each other creature on the battlefield. So your creatures, your opponent's creatures. Maybe now there are 20 copies of your commander. Maybe there's a bunch of creatures that people don't want to have, but you do want to have. Lots of interesting shenanigans. Mike, what are you thinking with this?
My brain's broken.
It's, so many possibilities.
What was the foretell card where, no, all the creatures that you have, they're actually going to be this instead?
That wasn't Raven Form, but that was something else.
It was something different. But the point is that the ideas of that card, well, that means it's actually this, that actually means it's this, blah, 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 blah. The idea of, everything is going to be this now. Everything. I love the idea that choose target creature you control. Cool. Do you want to make everything
Mystic Reflection?
Do you want to make everything cool? Yes, thank you. Do you want to make everything awesome? Do you want to make everything terrible? Okay, great. Everything is a 1/1, and now I'm gonna pump my team and attack you with everything.
Just endless possibilities. And Nanogene Conversion is perfect, right? Because as I was describing, just flavor wise, this is nanobots kind of changing people into something else. So this is very appropriate.
Right. It's very cool. I like this. We could talk about a lot of hypotheticals on it. We're just about halfway through.
Yeah, I know. We have a lot of stuff to do, and I'm sorry if we don't devote as much time as we could to any specific card, but there's just so much to get through.
Maybe we do like a, was there something that we missed episode as far as previous sets? And I'm happy
to
go back.
Listeners, just let us know. Let's keep moving.
Renegade Silent, 3 and a blue for a 3/3 alien horror creature. Wasn't ready for that. At the beginning of your end step, goad up to 1 target creature you don't control and put a +1/+1 counter on Renegade Silent. Renegade Silent phases out. Huh. Okay.
Yeah, so this is another extremely flavorful. First of all, they're doing a bang-up job with flavor. So the silence, real quick, that's an alien race. I'm not going to get too far into it, but basically they're like creepy G-Men style looking guys. You can see it on the card. The thing about them is that the moment you stop looking at them, you forget they ever existed and that you ever saw.
Oh, false Hydra. So, gross.
Yeah, so when you goad up to one target creature you don't control, right, that's them experiencing the Hydra. But then in the show, they come up with a rather ingenious solution, which is both great and creepy. The solution they come up with is every time they see the silence, they will write on their own body, maybe a tally mark, to indicate that they have seen the silence, because they'll forget instantly once they look away. So that's the plus one count.
Got it.
Right? Every time you see it, you're going to mark it down. And then it phases out because the moment you stop looking at it, like, it doesn't exist anymore. So very, very flavorful. I'm quite pleased with this.
Well, and that and the idea that, like, okay, great. At your end step, you're going to make this thing stronger, and it's going to go away, and it'll come back, and...
And you're not removing this creature because it's phased out.
That's pretty neat. I like that. Okay.
Yeah, this is like a almost like a ninja.
Yeah, kind of. It's got Gojitsu or something like that.
Gojitsu. We need more Go ninjas.
We do. What do you got for the next one here?
Yeah. Reverse to Polarity. Here we go. It's one blue for an instant. That's 3 mana total. It's modal, so you'll choose one. Mm-hmm. Option one, counter all other spells.
Okay. Cool.
I think we've seen one card like that before, but it's red
blue. Yeah, yeah.
Option two, switch each creature's power and toughness until end of turn. Mike,
we
talked about this incredibly strange edge case. This is the very, very final layer in the power and toughness layer, which is the final layer. So this is the very last effect that applies for interaction of continuous effects. Mm-hmm. We're not going to get too far into it. Option three, creatures can't be blocked.
There it is.
So we have three really interesting options here. We have a big mega counter spell that just counters the whole stack, which is great.
I don't like any of this. Go away.
Switch each creature's power and toughness. Now, you'll remember, Mike, we talked about this in my mnemonics article episode, that every other thing that you do to power and toughness happens before this. So they pump it up real big. Maybe they make its power super, super large. Yeah. Double its power and toughness. Well, after all of that is done, then this applies and it switches them. And then we have creatures can't be blocked this turn, which is, I mean, you can just win on the spot, or you can get a free trigger.
Somebody's going to die.
That's that true. Is three. You can cast this on somebody.
Three
else's
mana,
combat.
Someone dies. That's what I'm reading.
And you can really, I mean, just the shenanigans, like creatures can't be blocked, or switching power and toughness, you could create an unfavorable or strange combat situation. You can force combat through. You can negate. Spells, you can negate combat tricks. This is such a versatile spell, Mike.
It's very cool. I love the idea of one day I'm playing against a wall deck and I just do a board wipe in the weirdest way.
It's like, actually, now there are walls again.
I have nothing but walls. I am playing the Arcades deck. Great. All of your walls have zero toughness now.
Well, you have to be careful because some of these treat their toughness as though it was how
much
damage.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Right. So some of them are like, look at the toughness. That's how much damage they do. But some of them are, treat their, it could theoretically work, but you have to be careful.
I just really want to kill a wall of ice because it's an 07 and turn it into a 7-0. Bleh.
7-0, goodbye.
Last one we got here for blue. The Flood of Mars. 2 blue for an alien zombie horror. It wasn't weird enough when it was an alien horror the first time. Now it's returned.
Just keep it going.
3-3, Island Walk. Water always wins. Interesting. Whenever the Flood of Mars attacks, put a flood counter on another target creature or land. If it's a creature, it becomes a copy of the Flood of Mars. If it's a land, it becomes an island in addition to its other types. That's a cool creature!
Yeah, so this is immediately giving me Quicksilver Fountain, which is an effect. It's an artifact, I believe, that says you're going to put flood counters on lands, and those lands become islands. And basically, the card will keep doing that.
Until islands, right?
Literally every land is an island, and then it'll go away, and it removes all the counters. But barring that, there are islands forever. Now, this is really cool, because if you choose a creature, you're going to make, basically becomes a copy of Flood of Mars. So now it's happening twice as often. Yep. And if it's a land, becomes an island in addition to his other types. Now, that's very important. Very important note there. Because if it just said becomes an island...
This would be me.
That would be much, much worse. Yeah. Because that would mean, according to the rules, that it loses all of its abilities, Mike, which some people might not realize. That's why Blood Moon works the way it does. Right. But because it says island in addition to its other types, well, now it just, it becomes a land for better fixing.
But
you could combine this with a card that we're not going to necessarily talk about because it is not novel. It's not new to this set, but it was reprinted in the set, Mike, and that's Carpet of Flowers.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just a great, it's a one mana green enchantment, I believe, that says at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, or at the beginning of one of your two main phases, you're going to add an amount of mana equal to the number of islands the player with the most islands controls. Sure. So you could really sort of sweep it there. But this is just such a cool effect, Mike. And this, I mean, we always talk about creating a game within a game, mm-hmm. and warping the game around the cards you play. I mean, everybody has to pay attention to this now. This is starting to turn everything into islands. Now, it's not necessarily a bad thing when you turn land into an island with its other types because you're helping people fix, potentially. And that could be a nice angle.
It could be. But it's also got Island Walk. So as long as I'm doing that and then...
Right. If they have any islands, it's unblockable.
Yeah. And by the way, as far as I know, I read this creature as when you attack with it, it's unblockable. Because it's when you attack, you put a Flood Counter on a thing. So, yes.
Effectively, as long as they have a land that you can target and turn into an island, it is not able to be blocked.
It also has the I'm going to target my own creatures, make them Flood of Mars, and then I'm going to have more Flood of Mars, and I'm going to do this effect more often. That's really cool. Also, just the idea of, okay, great. Hey, that really scary thing is now a 3/3 that makes things like itself. Because it becomes a copy of that.
You target a creature with this, and it is no longer whatever it was. It is now Flood of Mars.
Your commander is a 3/3 alien zombie horror, but it does cool stuff when it attacks that flood.
And the cool thing about that, right, is now that it's a copy of Flood of Mars, when their Flood of Mars attacks, now it makes other things.
It's the literal flood. This is a very cool card.
This is really cool.
The concept is fun. Okay. That's blue. Got not a lot of cards left here for this episode. We're going to come back right after that.
But don't worry, we're going to have more episodes.
Yeah, I've already got myself comfy in the chair for the day. Good.
All right, let's move on to black.
Yeah, Doomsday Confluence, XX Black. Here we go. Sorcery, choose X. You may choose the same mode more than once.
Wow, that's a unique twist.
Yes. So each player sacrifices a non-artifact creature or... create a 3/3 black Dalek artifact creature token with menace, or each opponent discards a card. So
now, first of all, Mike, before our listeners scream at you, it's Dalek.
A Dalek. Okay, sorry.
It's Dalek.
Fair enough. Yikes. So
wow. Okay, so you're paying double X. Let's say you wanted to choose each mode once. Okay. So you're going to pay 3/3. That's 6+1. You're going to pay 7 for that. So the cost really starts to balloon because you're paying twice as much. Yes. However, you can really make some things start to mm-hmm. happen here. Let's say that you wanted to just completely ruin somebody's day and you had some mana to throw around. Let's say you pick each opponent discards a card 4 times. So you'll pay 9 mana and each opponent discards the better part of their hand or maybe their entire hand. That's just mean, Mike. Yep.
Maybe you're
playing each player sacrifices a non-artifact creature and you're playing maybe some Turgrid, something like that.
Well, and here's where it gets interesting to me. You've got that, or this is a 3-mana removal spell if somebody's got one creature on the board. And you're just going to happen to hit some other stuff with it, too.
That's true. You know, Edict effects do function as removal if they have a very small number of things that they can choose between.
Yeah. So I think that, man, anytime you're making opponents discard cards is rough.
This could be a game finisher right here, mm-hmm. if you have the mana for it.
Yeah, no, it just even just the idea of okay, great, I attacked. Now we're going post combat main. I'm going to pay 5 into this. Just everybody sacrifice 2 creatures real quick. That's a lot of death on the board for.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about the lowest case, right? Because choosing 0 is not going to help you as it could in some. But if you choose 1, you'll pay 3 total.
Yep,
and you'll choose one of these effects, which is not awful as a rate.
No, X Tribal is pretty solid. or sorry, X-Typal.
X-Typal,
But as far as the ability to do a decent amount of work, it's kind of weird. I read this card and went, oh, that's pretty good cost. And then, oh, that's aggressively costed. That's a lot to pay. And then think about it again. Doing, that's a good effect for the mana.
If you're doing X and you're in green and red, you can have that Roshin Meanderer,
sure,
which is a green and red, and it's going to add quadruple colorless only for X spells.
Mm-hmm.
I think this modal spells have potential.
There's ways to play into it, and I like the card a decent bit here.
And I think the market's responding to that. This is above $7.
Yep. What do you got for the next one? We're going back to sagas.
We're going back to sagas. Let's talk about Genesis of the Daleks, which is a 4 black. That's 6 mana for an enchantment saga. Chapters 1, 2, and 3 create a 3/3 black Dalek artifact creature token with menace for each lore counter on Genesis of the Daleks. Mike, we need to have a quick math break, okay? Chapter, it's going to see one lore counter, and it's going to make a 3/3. Second chapter, it sees two lore counters, and it'll make 2 3/3s. Now you have 3 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Third, it'll make 3 3/3s. Now you have 6 of them. So you have
a lot of menace creatures.
You have 18 power across 6 bodies with menace. And then if we somehow, how did they not blow this up? Mm-hmm. But if we get to chapter 4, target opponent faces a villainous choice. Oh, yeah, baby. Destroy all Dalek creatures, and each of your opponents loses life equal to the total power of Daleks that died this turn. That's at least 18, Mike. Or destroy all non-Dalek creatures, which is a board wipe. Another card that just starts to warp the game around itself, Mike, and the value it's accumulating. I mean, people are very heavily incentivized to remove this ASAP because with each passing turn, the number of Daleks you get to make increases.
6 mana.
And they have menace, so they're menace cards with menace, creatures that attack with menace, can't be blocked by only one creature. They have to be double, triple, quadruple blocked, however, which can really start to add up, especially when you have 6 of them. That means that if you want to block them all, Mike, you have to have at least 12 blockers, which... you probably don't.
6 mana is a lot, but if it costs less than that, I think this would be too much.
You really want to have... You want to make sure this is staying on the field somehow.
Yep.
Because if this gets blown up after you make a single 3/3 with menace, that's a feels-bad situation, right? You want this to at least stay out for chapters 1, 2, and preferably 3.
For sure.
If you can get to 4, that's just gravy. But if this gets deleted after chapter 1, that doesn't feel good at all.
I like that it's a villainous choice and it's not something where your opponents vote or even you get to vote. You're going to put it on one person.
Right. One opponent makes a choice.
Yep.
This is one player's choice. It affects the whole board. Either each of your opponents, you'll destroy all the Daleks, and each of your opponents will lose life equal to the total power combined.
Well, the reason...
The reason
I like that means is it's really easy to get the effect that you want. Am I going to target somebody who doesn't have a lot of life, or am I going to target somebody who doesn't have any creatures?
I can say, listen, I'm trying to get somebody to pick this option.
Yep.
Which one of you is going to do that?
Yep. I like it.
I love it. Let's move on.
Yeah. The Toymaker's Trap, 2 and a black for an enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, secretly choose a number between 1 and 5 that hasn't been chosen. That's good. If you do, an opponent guesses which number you chose, then you reveal the number you chose. If they guessed wrong, they lose life equal to the number they guessed, and you draw a card. If they guessed right, sacrifice the Toymaker's Trap.
Well, okay. So there's a lot of stuff going on
here
in this gambit. Let's just start kind of talking this out. So right off the bat, we're doing the guessing game, which you know I love. That's Sphinx. That's the Liar's Pendulum.
Sure.
We love this kind of thing. Very, very silly, interesting interactions. However, you look at it and you're like, well, you know, it's just a 20%. It's a 1 in 5, right? You choose randomly, they choose randomly.
Yep.
Maybe there's some ungives that... No, because there is a reason why you might want to choose higher, but other than that, right?
Yep.
You might want to choose higher because if they guess incorrectly and they guessed high, they'll lose, you know, a larger amount of life. But more than that, the numbers that you've chosen are being eliminated from the list of things you can select to choose. So this could potentially go on for a while, or it could get nipped in the bud, but eventually they're going to guess correctly.
They have to.
And eventually you'll sacrifice to it. Right. Eventually they will guess correctly. Mike, this is just so fascinating. Talk to me.
Well, I can talk to you.
Yeah.
We're running. We've got one more card after this, so I can talk to you. Or I could do this. hey, Alex, I have played the Toy Maker's Trap. I'm choosing you on my upkeep. I'm writing down a number. Okay, Alex, what number did I choose?
Oh, boy. Did you choose 4?
I did not. I chose 2. Take 2 damage. I'm going to draw a card.
No, no, no. I lose 4 life because I guessed 4 and you draw.
Oh, that's even better!
I know!
Okay, Alex. Hey, Alex.
Yes.
It's the second turn on my upkeep. I picked a number. What do you choose?
4.
Oh, I checked 1. Take 4 damage. You're going to draw a card.
No!
Hey, Alex. Yeah. It's your turn.
3.
I picked 5.
No.
This is my great card. At this point,
I've lost like 15 life.
This is such a Mike's having a grand
old time. Is this not just the coolest card?
I totally misunderstood. I thought it was something they gave. They lost life equal to the number you guessed.
No, no, no.
Oh my gosh, that's so fun. They choose.
So they're incentivized to choose low.
Oh, boy. Although
not necessarily by that much. This, wow, and only 3 mana for such a fun minigame. So fun. I think this goes in Belbay, right? Because it's the beginning of my upkeep. My opponent could lose life. Yep. That's mana for me in Belbay.
That's so good.
Great stuff there. We love this card.
This is how the episode ends.
Let's move on to our final card. This is how the episode ends. This is how it ends.
Yep.
3 to black. It's a 4 mana for a sorcery. Target creature's instant owner. Oh, did I say sorcery? I'm a fool.
It's okay.
It's 4 mana for an instant, which is way better. Target creature's owner shuffles it into their library, then faces a villainous choice. They lose 5 life, or they shuffle another creature they own into their library.
Yikes!
So this is giving me Rhystic vibes. Although, it still happens.
Yeah.
Right, so you're either going to get... think about this value, because we got to be careful with this. Target creature's owner shuffles it into their library. Yep. So if it's a commander, it's either lost forever, they're not choosing that, or it goes to their command zone, which is pretty solid.
Great.
If it's not their commander and it goes into their library, they probably never see it again. If it's a token and you shuffle it into their library, it ceases to exist. It's gone forever and it never comes back.
Yep.
But then they can either lose 5, which, let's be honest, they probably lose the 5 unless they can't. Or they'll shuffle another creature they own into their library. Now, this is easy to miss. For this first one, at the beginning, you choose. The caster of the spell chooses.
Then they choose.
If the player does a villainous choice and they choose to do another creature, then they choose that one. You don't get to choose the second one.
Right.
Mike, the cost on this, which is 4 mana for an instant, I feel like you would want to get the second creature shuffled in because one creature in 5 life, probably not good enough for me.
I don't mind 4 mana for removal that gets around indestructible kind of stuff.
Indestructible, yeah.
Yeah. So 4 mana makes something go away more than likely.
Right.
And they either lose 5 life or they shuffle another creature.
Shuffling is just brutal, right? Because it's not destroying. And there's that hope that maybe they'll see it again. They probably won't.
I like this. If
it's their commander, they have to send it away.
Right. And here's the other thing. When you do this, and great, they have to choose the other creature. Well, I'm not using this against somebody who's probably got a whole bunch of tokens. You know,
you want to choose somebody who doesn't have a lot of options to choose between.
I like this. It's maybe not like the crazy impact on the other cards, but I do feel like this is one of the ones where the lowest value that you're going to get from it is still good.
This ain't no Toy Maker's Trap. Now, Mike, we do have a couple more episodes to record. So before we sign off, let's talk about our favorite card in white, blue, and black.
Okay.
And then we'll sign off and we'll start working on our next episode. We'll do the rest of the monocolors.
Sure.
Then we have, or not monocolors, even 99 cards. And then we have another episode where we talk about all the cool commanders. But first, let's talk about what's the coolest card in white that we saw today, Mike?
Okay. White? It's War Games. The War Games is fun. It just is fun. Because the worst case scenario in it is, okay, great. I'm going to take back. Hey, you know what? You guys aren't having as much fun with this. We're just going to get rid of all of the warriors.
I like the word games. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot.
I would definitely choose that one. Now, if since you chose it, now I can't choose that one anymore, then yep. I guess I'll just have to choose Everybody Lives.
Yeah, yeah, that's part of why I was like, I'm going to take this one and make you pick Everybody Lives.
All right. So both great options yep. there. How about blue? What
looked good? I went for for white. How about you get first on this one?
Okay. For blue, gosh, I think Hunted by the Family is so cool.
Yep.
Now, it's really expensive, sure. right? It's 7 mana, and it's currently 20, but it'll probably fall.
Mm-hmm.
You just get to start making copies, or they lose what they have. And that's not just a choice, right? Yep. We talk about having these great choices that people have to make, but this is very much a choice of either political fun, and you get to make a copy of my creature, or I'm taking my ball and going home.
Yep.
You don't get to have a copy of my creature, but also I don't get to have my creature anymore either. Yep. So that's a really cool interaction. Mike, what do you choose for blue?
I'm Battlecruiser, so I choose Hunted by the Family. That said, the Flood of that's Mars fair. Is a fun, like, that is a fun, oh, repeatable yeah. kind of effect. And it's not one of those cards. It's, what's the Ataphage creature, where it's like, if I don't get rid of this before it attacks,
it's just going to keep.
It's just going to keep doing things that yeah. are going to that it's going
to
suck.
Well, I mean, if you put this in your deck, you kind of have to put Quicksilver Fountain in your deck and hope that you get them both at once.
Or just again, the idea of if I have a 3/3 that when it attacks, it makes more things that do the thing, and it's just an infectious flood of alien zombie horror. The idea that somebody is going to remove that, I don't know. Like maybe.
Also, this is like this could work in ninjutsu decks, right? Yeah. Because this card is almost unblockable, and then you can sub something in for it and bounce this back to your hand.
Yeah. It's I just like this card just because I don't think it is threatening enough until it's already too late. And that's yeah, pretty that's, cool.
It's churning that value we talk about, right? It's the boiling frog.
Yep.
That the value is so slow and so churning that nobody really wants to waste resources on removing it, but by the time it becomes a problem and they do want to remove it, now it's too late. The same thing with making up your with advancing your board state as a group hug deck, mm-hmm. right? You in the early game, you're handing out gifts, you're changing the board state, you're making everybody have a good time. You're slowly building up your resources, and by the time somebody decides that you're a threat, well, now it's too late. You're way too powerful now.
I'm going to be giving people the Flood of Mars as a gift. Oh, hey, I like your 1/1 token. Would you like it to be a 3/3 that turns other things into it?
Now, in black, we only talked about four cards.
Yeah, it's Toymaker's Trap. We don't have to talk about it any further. It's the Toymaker's
Trap.
It's awesome.
So cool.
We're not diversifying. We're not saying, oh, well, you pick this card, so I pick. No, it's the Toymaker's Trap. That's so fun. Great. The first time that we played a card out on the episode.
Thank you so much for joining us. We have so many more cards to talk about. Yep. So if you want to make sure you don't miss the rest of our Doctor Who Social Set review, Mike, what should they do?
Well, I mean, keep listening because the next one's going to be right after this. But if you also wanted to, you know, follow up and ask us questions about this set, if you wanted to talk with other people and see if they're excited about it the same way that we are, go into the show notes. Go to our Discord link. There you're going to be able to talk to a whole bunch of people that do a lot of things, like reach out to Alex, share their deck lists, talk about weird cards that nobody plays that should absolutely be played because it's super fun for the entire table.
We love our Discord. And I've said it before, right? It's not the situation where we just have a bunch of sycophants in there who are like, ooh, your show is so good. We love you. No, it's people who are in there who are actually doing a single day. They're deck teching their political decks every day. And Mike, even if you and I just died and never came back, our community would still exist and they would still stay around.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's just
they might want to change the name.
But we also have an option if you're just super into this podcast and maybe you want to either put your name on it or influence the direction of where it goes or just in general be more connected with Mike and I on a personal level. Mike, what would they do if they wanted to do that?
So you can actually support the show personally by going to our Patreon at patreon.com/socialcontractEDH or, you know, obviously go to Patreon and just search for the Social Contract in their search bar at the homepage. From there, there's a lot of different tiers that you can support the show. We got another patron since the last time that we recorded and appreciate you. It's cool to see that.
Right? And not just because, like, hey, thanks for keeping the lights on and everything like that. Electricity mm-hmm. is high, and soon it's going to be even higher because I'm going to have to keep the house warm instead of cold.
I'll just turn on your PC.
Well, yeah, about that. but the idea that it is just, like, a continuous go of, hey, this is something that is fun for us. It's work. Don't get me wrong. But it's fun for us. But the fact that other people like it is super awesome. And I'm not going to keep doing that type of talk because you and I still have two more episodes that we have to try and roll out today.
We do, Mike. There's just no time. Patrons, thank you so much. We love you. And we're about to move in to the rest of our 99, as well as talking about the legends. Please tune into our following episodes if you want to hear more about it.
And normally I say, until then, we'll talk to you soon. Hey, we're going to talk to you soon, and
we're going to talk to you
potentially
real soon.
In about 4 seconds, depending on how long it takes
depending
for your Spotify
what
or whatever
you
do. Ready? Go.
All right. Thank you so much for tuning in.